Welcome to First and 15, the show that takes you around the UK flag football scene. Sponsored by Nuola, your customised sportswear supplier.
Hello, and welcome to the First and 15 football podcast. I'm Jay Ballamy. I'm joined virtually today by Lewis Phillips.
Hello.
And I'm also joined by Ryan Home Alone McEvening.
Hello.
Lewis, Ryan, how are we?
Very good. Love a four-day weekend. It reminds me of better times when I was a student.
You just can't beat a four-day bank holiday weekend. Nothing better.
Did either of you get up to anything interesting on your four-day bank holiday weekend? Or did you do exactly what students do and just go home?
I spent pretty much two full days on the sofa playing video games. It was great.
Considering I live at home still, going home was mostly of what I did anyway.
Fair enough. Very good. All right, cool. So today we'll be covering some of our favourite matchups from... Lewis, I don't know whether I'm supposed to call this game day one or game day two. What would you like me to do? Game day two?
As it's the southern pod, we'll refer to it as game day one.
Yeah. Fuck the rest of the UK, right?
North doesn't count anyway. It's not a real place.
It's not real. Yeah. So game day one for the Southern Premiership. Since we've got no Gareth or Luke champion today, Home Alone, you're going to take us through the whole Premiership. And we will start with a nice, easy fixture for you. Let's start with the Flash Devils game.
Yeah, so this is a very exciting game for us at the Devils. I think the Flash will be looking forward to it as well. These were 1 and 2 in the Southeast, Div 1 last year. And they had two very close fixtures. I've got the Devils winning this one, in no surprise there. But I think the Devils will come away a couple scores better. I think when we look at preseason results, we have fared better than the Flash. But obviously, for game day one, things do get a bit weird. Flash beat us in game day one last year. So who knows what can happen.
And Home Alone, what is the status currently of Howell's little finger?
Completely fine. Yeah, he was throwing very well at practice this weekend. I think he's got the all clear from the doctors, so I don't think we have any concerns for that going into game day one.
Excellent. And Lewis, sort of bringing your opinion in here, how do you think that the Flash will manage that step up into the Premiership? Do you think they, you know, because obviously we have a situation here where some of those players can get rotated down to Spark, for instance, or up to the Smoke. You know, how will that Flash team look, do you think?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? That's the question mark. I think, as far as I'm aware, I've not seen an awful lot from tournaments and things, not seen an awful lot of turnover from the Devils. It's very much the same kind of names that we'd expect to see, but as we know, a lot of change can happen in that London camp, especially with entering a third team now. So that's very much where the questions lie, and it's a difficult question to answer for game day one, I think, because until we actually see who turns up and who's on the roster, you don't know. There could be some names that are on different team rosters. But if we're going by, you know, if we're going by all we can at the minute, which is how did this team look last year, they were definitely a premiership side. If there hasn't been much turnover, then this could be a really tasty game. They were two teams that were quite evenly matched throughout last season, especially that that final game day showdown for the top spot in the division. So I don't know, ask me again in game day two when we actually know what the Flash side looks like.
Yeah, but the reality is, Lewis, I'm asking you now in game day one, and I'm asking you to pull the crystal ball out and make a good prediction. Let me ask you a different question. Say we take away some of the vertical threats that Brian had last year on the Flash. Does it change the way that team plays stylistically on offense?
I don't think so, because, I mean, the thing that every London team always brings to the table is speed and athleticism. So even if you take away someone that isn't necessarily a vertical threat, if you can get some, there's still going to be people who can be quick across the middle and make grabs and make people miss. So despite it being an offspring of Smoke, who are very much quite a vertical team, I think, I think they've definitely still got enough athleticism and enough speed to beat people in the short to medium yard.
I think Brian's a smart enough quarterback as well, where if he knows he needs to use the sort of short to medium gain just to kind of move the chains a bit, I think he's definitely adept to do that. So I think that's definitely a weapon that he can, if, say, those deep threats have gone, that he definitely can adjust to bring into the game.
Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of how they beat us last year when we played them, because we'd very much planned for them to be quite a vertical team. We were basically expecting to play a team very similar to the Smoke that we're going to try and get behind us and get over the top. So we played our safeties quite conservatively and kept everything underneath, but they were able to take advantage of those spaces underneath, like you said, because Brian's game plan was pretty good and very smart and very quick.
And flipping tack back to the Devils then, Home Alone. From my understanding, you've probably picked up one or two receivers in the off-season that are sort of ex Reading Knights players from days gone past. We've obviously now seen, or some people have seen, the announcement on GB Silver's team, and we've got James Thal, JT, and Isaac Harding now as GB Silver's players. How do you think that game management is going to come into it in terms of getting everybody on that roster on the field? Is it more now a situation where we're putting people in for certain packages, or is it just simply, hey, we're going to run with the hottest four hands we've got?
I think it's just a luxury that we have now as the Devils. I think we have got set packages, but we have plenty of people that can play many roles, really. I don't think we haven't got a plan to sort of attack in terms of different packages. I think we are going to roll kind of the hot hand with it. But when you look at the sort of depth we have and the factor you mentioned with the ex-Knights, a lot of us have been playing together for the best part of, 5-6 years now. I think there is that familiarity with each other that if we need to rotate round and move packages, we can. And probably with the most ready team, I'd suggest to be able to do that.
Reading B team coming?
Maybe not just yet. We still only had 8 to practice last week. So I think we're a little bit further away than I anticipated for that.
Well, that's excellent analysis, Home Alone. Let me move over to the Flash Spartans game. Take me through this fixture. Obviously, we've just talked about the Flash in a good amount of detail there. What do we know about the Spartans going into this year?
I don't know an amazing amount myself, but I know there is a lot of talent on that team. Last year, we saw them runners-up to the Northants Titans in the OFL Cup last year alongside a Sharks team as well. So they've definitely got a lot of talent, and I think this will probably be one of the closer games, at least hypothetically, from the Southeast Prem. I've got this kind of being a one-score game, so I think it'd be a really, really interesting one to watch, and I'm excited to see how both teams play in that game.
Excellent. Okay. Well, let's move to the other side of the Premiership then and talk about the Coventry Phoenix versus the Chichester Sharks.
Yeah, I think this is another really exciting game. I think they finished third and fourth in the Southwest Prem last year. And as Gareth mentioned on our preseason kickoff show, these are the types of games both teams realistically need to be winning. Sort of obviously looking very much at the end of the season for playoffs, but I think they match up very well. And I think realistically it could go either way. I'm going to give the slight edge to the Sharks, but I think this comes down to a battle of extra points more than it will be on touchdowns. So I think execution is going to be crucially important. And I think I back Neil a bit more to execute in that regard than the Coventry Cougars can or Coventry Phoenix can.
Just to echo what Home Alone was saying, I think these are two teams that in theory are quite closely matched. And I think he's right. I think the Sharks' experience with Neil might just be enough. I think the Phoenix have got some explosive players. Ben Eaton's got a cannon for an arm. Kieran Eaton is crazy quick. Jonathan Williams is super fast. He absolutely torched everyone from what I saw at the OFL games that he was playing with the Mercenaries. But yeah, they've got lots of speed and explosiveness. But I think the wily old Sharks will do just enough to kind of stick around and never be quite put to bed. And in those final 60 seconds, that's when Neil does his most dangerous psyche work.
His voodoo magic.
His voodoo magic.
I think the thing I'll be looking for here, and this is sort of no knock on the Sharks, is that it's very rare that they come up with it against a team that can match them speed for speed across the field. And you'd say Phoenix is probably one of those teams. It's just a case of, will the stretch element of what they can do? And we've seen this, you know, over the years with their ability for Ben Eaton to put a ball deep in a really, really good location. Will that stretch element open them up so much more on defense? And can the Sharks still rely on, and we like to mention Neil Henderson's age, and we like to joke about it, but can they keep relying on the same, you know, combination of good play design that they've got to get their guys open against a quite an agile Phoenix defense?
I think Neil Henderson's probably a bit like the British Tom Brady almost, in the fact that until we see him lose it, can we ever really discount him in a way? Certainly in the preseason when we faced them, he was still putting it about everywhere. And I think when you play the Sharks, you obviously can't really dedicate to sort of defending the deep or defending the shallow. You kind of have to have awareness on all parts of the field. So I think the Sharks will be fine in that regard. It's just whether Coventry can get a few stops. But yeah, like I say, I think it'll be really close. And I don't think Gareth will be very happy with us mentioning sort of Coventry going deep on him either.
I think Coventry are gonna bring the fireworks and the flash, and they'll have everything that'll look good. But I think when you look at the score and you realise that, you know, the Sharks are still there, and you think, oh, they're not put to bed. They've not gone away. They at no point in the game, I think, will Coventry feel comfortable. And then, yeah, actually, it could just come down to a couple of extra points.
It'll be really good to see a Sharks side as well that's healthy. I mean, yes. I'm not trying to jinx the team, because it's the sort of thing that they'll come back and bite me later in the year when they half their team are, you know, pulled a, you know, left elbow wing or whatever. But it'll be nice to see that Sharks team in full flight, really, rather than the team that we saw at the end of the season where they were missing some key components.
Yeah, this will be the strongest we've seen the Sharks for a little while.
Absolutely. And then let's move on to our next fixture, which also has the Sharks in, but it's the Sharks-Titans game. So big weekend for the Sharks. Home Alone, what are we sort of anticipating at this matchup?
I think everything we just said for the previous game, we can say here. I think the Titans may be a class, not maybe above, but slightly better for me than the Sharks. I think they just seem to have a bit higher end of talent overall. Again, I think this is another battle of extra points. I really think that it is going to come down to one score and very close on the scoreline. But yeah, for me, the Titans just about edge it out. But absolutely, I think the Sharks can win this. And I think they'll definitely look at this as a game almost to kind of prove themselves after last year with having lots of injuries, not really being able to have a full strength team towards the end of the year. I think this is the game they would have circled on week one as kind of their we're back kind of game almost.
I think that the Chichester Sharks have kind of been a bit hard done by here by the whoever's in charge of doing the schedule. He's kind of screwed them over a little bit, because they've got a really rough day. They play Cardiff Hurricanes straight off the bat, first game, and then they've got a bit of a break, and they'll play the Phoenix, which is going to be no easy game. And they play back-to-back, then the second game back-to-back after that is going to be against Titans to end it. That's a rough schedule for one day, playing the Hurricanes, Phoenix and Titans. I think on paper and on most other days, I think the Sharks could quite easily go toe-to-toe with the Titans. But I think at that late stage in the day might be a little step too far. The Titans are only playing two games. They play the Neptunes and the Sharks. I think they'll be fresher, and I think it's just not going to be. It's not the best time of day for the Sharks to be playing that game. The third game, playing back to back after playing the Phoenix, in what we're expecting to be a tight game, I think maybe if it was the other way around, because I agree the Titans and Phoenix, I think, are quite closely matched, but I think the Titans will have the edge over them. And they're just a little bit sharper and a bit cleaner. So I think it's unfortunate that the Sharks are playing the Titans after the Phoenix. And I think that could be the difference. I'd probably see the Sharks struggle down the stretch of the game.
So my question was going to be, what is the chance the Sharks finishing the day above 500? Put a percentage chance on it.
I think probably about 65-70%. I definitely think that they'll fancy themselves against the Titans. I think, again, that's kind of the more 50-50 one for me. I think Coventry Phoenix will give them a good game, but I think the Sharks will come out on top in that one. So, yeah, I think they'll get one of them done. It's just whether they've got enough in the tank then at the end to beat the Titans. But I absolutely think that they'll definitely be reckoning that they can win that game. And I think they'll have some confidence going into it. They definitely won't be sort of defeated before.
I think that's quite generous. I don't know. I think by the time you faced off against the Hurricanes and what I'm expecting to be a scrap with the Phoenix, I think it might be a bit too much to ask for them to. Quite easily could be less than a one score game at halftime. But I just think as the game goes on and those tired legs start to cramp, I think the Titans will take over. If you want me to put a number on it, I'll say there's a 20% chance that Sharks win two games that day.
Well, as we know in flag football, anything can happen. Let's move swiftly on then to the Division 1 fixtures. And Lewis, let's start with the East. Bucks Wolves versus London Spark.
Yeah, so straight out the gate, I think this is a game that we all said last week was going to be a top of the table clash, possibly. These two teams absolutely are probably going to be in the conversation at the end of the season for that top spot. So absolutely circle this game as one to watch, one to keep an eye out for, because this could have very important connotations down the stretch. Spark, who knows what they're gonna come out like to begin the season. And Bucks Wolves, similarly, you know, just thinking about last year and the way each of these two franchises, if that's the way you want to put it, started, you know, Bucks Wolves came out of the gate really hot, put up a couple of shutouts and flash faltered against Reading and then went on a rampage for the rest of the year. So yeah, really exciting game to keep an eye out for in the East.
Do we think that the, and it's good to ask this without Luke here because we won't get his biased nor his not paying attention. Do we think that the London Smokes program is deep enough to support that third team at a quality level? Bearing in mind, we're talking about a Buck side that have been together probably, I mean, some of them played youth ball together, so that team's in its spine has probably been together for the best part of about 12 years now. Do we think that the London area, or the London program, I should say, because there are other London clubs, is good enough to support a team that can come down and just be on that third tier and still be able to outplay a team that's been together for so long?
Well, I don't know about outplay, but I think there's definitely a lot of quality coaching in that London organisation, and there's definitely a lot of athleticism and just training alongside each other, going up against the Flash and the Smoke week in, week out at practice is going to make them a better team. Is that going to manifest itself straight away in the first game? I'm not sure. I think, again, the Spark might be a bit hard done by here by the scheduling gods to come up against what is probably going to be the top division rival for the first game and the first day of the year. But yeah, lots of question marks around Spark.
I think the other question that we need to ask is what value we put on Scheme, because realistically you'd imagine that the Spark will have at least pinched the Smoke or the Flash's playbooks So even if they do have, say, maybe some lesser athletes than the Smoke and the Flash, to what level will sort of scheme around them rise them actually up above some of these Div 1 programs that have or haven't had that chance to really see sort of Premiership level playbooks and have that exposure to them on a regular basis?
Moving on. Sharksbury versus Waveney Wolves. Again, another good contest in terms of physical matchup. Lewis, why have you picked these two teams to play each other?
So, I'm going to pair this with my other choice for these, which is Sharksbury and Waveney. And I think the Sharks as an organisation, both their A team and their B team, have got a lot to prove this weekend. So, like we said with the Premiership side, that going up against the Phoenix and the Titans is kind of going to give us an idea of what the Sharks are really made of. And I think the same is going to be true in Division One. So, is basing everything off of last year, because as we mentioned last week, there's, you know, changes in both camps here in Waveney and in Salisbury. We don't necessarily know an awful lot about, but basing things on last week's podcast, are the Sharksbury going to be a team that is more competitive with the likes of the Marauders, or are they going to be more competitive with the likes of Waveney? But then also, how Waveney improved. So again, I think this play with the Sharksbury playing both the Marauders and Waveney Wolves will give us a really good sort of barometer for what the steps that they've taken to improve and what we can expect for them for the rest of the season.
I think on that, when we look back to next year, I think the Marauders were on the verge of actually being the Sharksbury last year, but then kind of rather
wasn't that
dramatic...
wasn't the game that Gareth decided he might be a Sharksbury player for a day?
I think so, yeah. Hitting that Madden power up button almost. But yeah, no, I absolutely agree, and I think Gareth did speak about the fact that the Sharksbury did have some new players, so it's whether they can kind of come in and actually have much of an impact really to sort of push them a bit further over the Marauders into maybe that Waveney conversation if Waveney have sort of their quarterback situation out.
Yeah, I'm looking for Sharksbury to really separate themselves from the pack here, right? Like I said, I think if we think that Bucks Wolves and London Spark are probably the top, I think Sharksbury are probably the team most likely to sort of separate themselves from the rest of the pack. I think there's an opportunity for them to prove that, all right, maybe they're probably not as good as the Wolves and the Spark, but they can certainly prove that they're much better than the rest of their division.
And who do you think would win in a three-way? a Wolf from Norfolk, a lesser Shark, or whatever a Marauder is?
Marauder's a pirate, essentially.
Well, why is it not a pirate? No, seriously, why
isn't
is it a Marauder and not a pirate?
Marauding. The pirates like marauding, isn't that what it is?
So the act of pirating versus a Norfolk Wolf versus a lesser Shark.
Can the Wolf swim?
Well, is the fight in water? I think the fight... Well, where is this fight, Lewis?
Well, it's in Norfolk, so this is Lowestoft.
Oh, wow. Do we get to play the whole who will travel game with both these teams? I mean, Salisbury to Norfolk is an unlikely journey for most, but it's also quite a long one, let's be fair. It's a good drive. The reality of the Waveney Wolves, do we think we'll see them take that step this year? They've clearly got some incredible players on that team. It's just about putting it together, right? That's the key for them.
Yeah, and I kind of hope they are in a position to start putting it together now. I think most of them have graduated now from their youth setup. I think having played both in the adult leagues and the youth leagues last year, they absolutely have got a lot of maybe experience now that some other teams maybe aren't able to draw on. Obviously, they were at a finals day for the youth team last year, so I think we're definitely going to see a more mature Waveney Wolves set up. I just think, have they been able to figure out kind of how to get their better weapons the ball more consistently? I think that was one of their big issues last year. because if they can, they absolutely can start going toe-to-toe with all the other teams in that division. I think they'll probably not maybe fancy themselves in some games, but I think they can definitely put up a good fight in others. So, yeah, I hope they have. But I do think that they should, in theory, be better, at least put a better score lines than they did last year.
Yeah, as I said, there's a space here for a third place to really separate themselves. And I think it is either going to be Chichester B or Waveney Wolves that will occupy that third place and really sort of separate themselves from the rest of the pack. So that's why I think Sharks B Waveney is probably a better matchup. But with Sharks B playing the Salisbury City Marauders as well, if Sharks B want to solidify themselves in that third spot, they need to be comfortably beating the likes of Salisbury City Marauders. And yeah, who knows about Waveney? If some of those youth players have graduated and they are becoming the adult team that I hope they can be, then Sharks B Waveney could be the third place showdown.
It's an interesting thing, and we will move on to the West in a minute. But you know, and I'm casting the minds back to back in my day when I was a Reading player, and we used to you know, sat in whatever division structure that existed then that definitely doesn't exist now. We would look at the teams in what is now the modern West, and we would sort of say meh, you know, because it wasn't, those teams hadn't had the years under their belts to develop the sort of savviness that you needed to have to play flag at the near Premiership level. I'm not saying the Premiership level, because they weren't a Premiership team at that time. And you'd often see the East teams sweep the West in the cross-conference games. The opposite is flipped now. Obviously, Reading and Flash have gone up, and we've got still a very strong Bucks Wolves team. We don't know what the Spark will look like. And then quite a lot of developmental teams below that in terms of tenure in flag, you know, 1 to 2 years for most of those sides. Granted, some of them had some COVID years. And you've got the flip situation. Really, what I see is how many of those teams can survive the 2 to 3 years it can take to grind out developing savviness when you don't have players already integrated. So take the Kings, for example. We've managed to start with a group of players like Craig, like me, like Dylan, who had already had that experience with other teams, and we're able to get that learning going a lot quicker than what others would. Are any of these teams like Sharksby, like Waveney, like Salisbury, like Solent, able to survive the 2 to 3 years they need to get to that point, to get over that hump? And who can separate themselves first to be able to sustain themselves? You know, you can look at the Norfolk thing with Waveney in one way that says, okay, they are really out there by themselves. But they have a huge recruiting pool as a result of that. You've got to think that their ability to go and get players outside of their youth setup must be good, and we know they're active on social media.
Even just by having a youth program, like, I think they've really kind of played the long game, because they've had youth flag programs for a while, and now they're starting to see the fruits of those labors. So you know, the adult team is the latest team to join joining the competition, and now you're starting to see youth players come through the ranks, players who played for their under 11 team, played for their under 14 team, played for their under 17 team, and are now playing for the adults. So I think, like, start the clock on Waveney now that those players are starting to come through. Like, give those youngsters a couple of years to get some experience, and you'll see them. I think they are definitely a candidate for, they can make it because the foundations are there. They haven't come from a situation where a bunch of people, or even a couple of people, a handful of people who've played the game before, have created a new team like the Kings. Like you say, with the Kings, like, it took a couple of experienced players like yourself and Craig and Dylan to kind of put the scaffolding together. They didn't have that, but they did have a solid foundation that is now, they're now building on. So for sure they are. I think you could put Chichester Sharks B in that category as well, just because of the experience in coaching that is around that. So Neil Henderson and Gareth, I think, in particular, you know, running the show there, that gives it a strength. my question marks would be around Solent and Salisbury, because I mean Solent had a rough time of it. It's you know, the youth program is their main thing, and this is largely you know, some of the adults, some of the mums and dads getting involved and playing. If they can follow the Waveney model and have some of those youth players grow up and graduate to the adult game, then who knows, it could be good. And then Salisbury are very much a program that whose first priority will always be its youth contact. So they don't have the youth flag element to rely on. So there's not going to be much graduation from there. So what happened? There's a question with Marauders for me, because the foundations are not there, and they haven't had that sort of strength and experience in the setup that's still there. You know, I know Abe, who started the team, the whole organization, isn't a part of the organization anymore. So that's my big question mark.
I will say, though, that addition of Toast to the Marauders is a big one for me. I think that is a real, you know, a steady head, a reasonable thinker in terms of the game. Obviously, he's played at a good level, I think, in contact. But the ability in terms of both being a good receiver, a good thrower of the ball, just someone that you can put on the board and just say he's going to do us a good job for the Marauders, I think does kick him into just another gear. I'm not saying it's top gear yet, but you know, we're certainly moving up one shift. So cool. Let's move on then finally to Div 1 West. Lewis, which fixture do you want to talk about first? I'll give you the pick of them.
Let's go Coyotes Gators, because we didn't speak much about the Coyotes last week.
Did we not? Did you get some feedback at Lewis Phillips first and 15 first and 15 podcast? Then could be that, we never know.
Yes, I may have. You gave me two teams to talk about, and I may have forgotten to go back and talk about the second one.
My
apologies, Coyotes.
Everybody wants their media time, obviously, to our millions and millions of listeners.
Yes, Coyotes Gators, I think, is an interesting fixture. So I think by all of our predictions last week for how the division's going to go, we all had these two kind of propping the division up at the bottom. Lots of change, I think, in the Gators camp, lots of recruitment, one name in particular leaving the camp. So it'll be interesting to see what the Gators come out with. Cardiff, not so sure. There has been an awful lot of turnover when they came to visit. Lots of familiar faces, not many new faces. So, for these two to kind of face off in the first game of the season, I think is going to be an interesting paint an interesting picture of how the bottom half of the division is going to look.
Our job here is to make a prediction. It doesn't necessarily mean it's right. And I'm sure by saying that, Lewis, you will have annoyed some people by saying
sure.
It's the bottom half. You know, I wouldn't say that the golfing class between let's call it the bottom for the moment, the predicted bottom and the predicted top in the West is particularly big. I think anybody beats anybody on their day.
Yeah, and allow me to caveat that straight away, is that I think that there's, you know, there's six teams in this division, and you could probably make an argument for five of them to be anywhere in that top three.
Absolutely. And there's two points I want to make here. So the first is about the Gators. Obviously, you sort of floated the idea of them potentially having a different quarterback this year. I don't know anything about one of the names. His name was Harry Taylor.
Harry Taylor.
You know, but from what I understand from chatting around the sort of flag and contact world, he's a decent enough player that could lift any sort of team. And then on the other hand, we're just talking about program building and teams that take jumps every year. The Coyotes, by default, by not losing anybody, you know, consistency is huge in this game, and having those systems worked out. I think I've seen Hugh Davis turn out for them for a friendly. I don't know whether he's on the roster this year.
He played in the friendly just a couple of weeks ago.
There you go. So, and you're adding those little bits and pieces that really do elevate your program. So, and I know Matthew Tynan's been doing some good work with one of the All-Star development squads as well. So I think this is going to be a really, really competitive game. I think you can't say there's a dark horse in this division because quite simply anybody could finish anywhere and anybody could beat anywhere, you know, but you've got to predict someone to go bottom and okay, so fine. Someone's put the Coyotes at the bottom. But equally, you could see them, if the Gators had one or two people not turn up on this game day, you could see the Coyotes winning by four scores. And likewise, the same other way. I think this is certainly going to be a really good one to watch.
Absolutely. So it's going to make all of us look very silly trying to predict this division this year. Yeah. I think absolutely you're right in that anyone can beat anyone on their day. And we're probably going to sit on here and go, that is a banker result for this team. And the other team's going to end up winning. So, yeah, I really, really do think that it's going to be so much fun to watch from the outside, at least.
Absolutely.
And it's in Cardiff as well. So Cardiff Bay get home field advantage. I believe, just looking at it now, Cardiff are only playing two games. Gwent have got three games, and this is the last game of the day. So, you know, it's not far for Gwent to travel. So I imagine they'll have a pretty strong squad. But, you know, they've got three tough games. You know, they play King straight off the bat. They've got to go up against the Supers, who are a tricky team. And then last but not least, they've got the Coyotes, which who knows, maybe, you know, they might see themselves as strong favourites in this. And this could be a bit of a trap game for them. Cardiff Bay have surprised people in the past, and I think this could be a banana skin for Gwent straight out of the gate.
Absolutely. We all love that first game day, though. That first game day spring. And then, Lewis, your final fixture you wanted to talk about was Kings Hammerheads.
Yeah, this is a heavyweight bout, I think. All caveated by whether or not you play quarterback for the duration of it, Jay. But to have you and Ash slinging it back and forth against each other is going to be something to watch. So, yeah, I've got an eye out for this one. I think this could be one of those shootout games that just has all the fireworks and no one is out of it until the final whistle blows, and then this is the bit where you tell me that you're not going to be throwing in this game at all, and that blows my prediction out of the water.
I mean, it would be to my disadvantage to tell anybody whether I was or wasn't throwing, wouldn't it? So I'm not going to...
Oh, come on, give us a podcast exclusive, Jay.
I'm obviously not going to say that. But no, I mean,
never,
the reality...
I can never bait you into giving anything away. He's very good, Frank.
It's, yeah, I mean, I've signed an NDA and, you know, no, I mean, quite simply, I cannot tell you how my arm will feel on the day. I think there is a world where I play half a game. I think there's a world where I play two games and I'm throwing a ball around in the middle. It will just be a case of how it feels on the day. You know, it's a rotator cuff tear is not an easy injury to recover from. So we'll see how it goes. I think, you know, and this is defeatist and I would say this, but I'm not looking much past the Hammerheads because I just don't see a weakness across that squad, especially now that I think that Harley will play.
Yeah.
You know, I think if Ash is, or if the team is coached smartly, they'll approach the fixture and play, you know, have a couple of scores and start getting conservative and just see the game out quickly. If it ends up being a shootout, which it could very well be, I think that's a fair point to make, then equally, I think you've got players on the Hammerhead side that have got the talent to be able to bail you out in situations. So it's absolutely going to be a good game. I think it'll be one I would love to have played, Lewis, if you could have organised it for maybe in about 6 to 7 weeks' time. That would be better for me.
Well, I mean, it's the last game of the day, so I don't think there's much chance of them kind of getting a couple of scores up and resting anyone. So they've got to play. They'll play Western and they'll play Exeter back to back. Keynesham will play Gwent. Yes. And then
we've got two breaks, and then we've got to play.
My apologies for giving you a big old break in the middle. Hadn't noticed that before. So you play Gwent, have a nice long break, and then you'll play Swansea. So who knows? Swansea get a break as well after their doubleheader before they play you. So you should all be nice and rested.
Yes, because that's exactly how it works. You know, you play one game in the morning and then your body just pauses and then you don't seize up after two games, especially when you've got a really bad shoulder. So anyway, Anyway, less of my moaning. Less
scheduling
of my
gods
issues.
Are taking a battering today.
Oh, it's a tough job. No one wants it. I think we're, you know, anybody would do a lot worse. I'm not knocking it. It just doesn't work in my favour ever. Good stuff. Let's end on some bold predictions then, boys. Who wants to go first? Anybody got one?
I've got one. If you got one, Home Alone, you go ahead.
I've got one, but I'm not sure how. I think it might be too bold. I'm going to say that over half the games in the Southern region will end as one score game. So that is within 8 points.
Wow. Good. That's good. That's a good mathsy one. I give something for Gareth to do whilst he's there. On his honeymoon.
Because what else would he want to be doing?
What a nerd. Anyway, yes. Okay, Lewis?
Okay, so mine's a little involved. So my prediction is that the Bucks Wolves will put up over 100 points in
this game. Who are they playing on the day?
They will play London Spark. That's what makes this bold. Then they play Chichester Sharks B and Solent Red Storm.
Yeah, okay. So they've got to average about 33 points a game. I appreciate the Spark game. You'd assume that defense is going to be pretty stout. But Bucks Wolves, not known for their explosive offense. Not necessarily a bad offense, but not known for being an explosive offense.
So allow me to explain further. So that the second half, just to be, if that wasn't bold enough for you, the second half of my prediction was going to be they will also allow less than 3 touchdowns across the weekend.
Wow!
So
that I can sort of believe, I'd say.
So let's imagine that things kind of go very similar. History repeats itself somewhat to last season. The Bucks Wolves shot out the gate last year. They came out game day one, put up 2 shutouts, 44 points on Berkshire, 34 points on Chichester Sharks B, who they're playing again this weekend. Then they put up 60 points on Solent Red Storm the week later, who they're also playing this weekend. And then the rest doesn't matter for that game day because they're not playing them. So in those 3 games, 2 of them they played on game day one and 1 they played the following week against a team that they're playing again this week, they put up over 100 points. 60 on Solent, 44 on Berkshire and 34 on Chichester, playing 2 of those opponents again. Now, if you remember, last year, Flash, first game of the season, against, shall we call them, an understrength Reading Devils team.
Well, missing one player, I'd say.
Missing their starting quarterback.
Yes.
which is a big player.
I know, but that only counts for the defensive side of it, not the offensive side of it.
Yeah, so Flash came out against an understrength Devils team and only put up 3 scores. And later on, with results that came afterwards, because I mean they came out and they're like the next game put like 55 points on Waveney, and went on a tear for the rest of the season. So let's say that the Spark have a similar outing, and their first game of the season, first game of the day, is, you know, a bit of a readjustment, shall we say. It's not necessarily themselves. Who's that team against? It's Buckinghamshire. So in arguably their toughest game of the season, perhaps they have a similar start to the way that the Flash started last year. Don't necessarily put up their best performance because they're still adjusting. And Buckinghamshire can get away from that game without giving up that very good defense, without giving up too much. That's where I think perhaps 1 or 2 of the 3 touchdowns they'll give up will come from. I think there's definitely a shutout in this weekend for Buckinghamshire, and plenty of opportunities, as they've proven in the past, to put up lots of points against the likes of Solent and Chichester.
You've almost proved to me that your hot take isn't that hot.
Yeah. Especially when in the second Chichester Sharks game, because I was doing some research there, they put up 54 points in that game. So they'd almost be able to put up 100 points between just playing the Red Storm and the Sharks B. So,
well, yeah. We've all talked about how much we're expecting Waveney and Chichester to improve. But regardless, I think putting up 100 points in a single game day is no easy feat. And I still back that very good Wolves defense. I don't think they'll go and put up a goose egg across the day. I think Spark will definitely be able to score some points against them, but I think they're probably fortunate that they're playing Spark first of all, which could say potentially require some adjustment from London, and they'll improve from then on, much like the Flash did last year.
Fair enough. Well, my bold prediction is going to be that someone will not get ejected, but will receive one of the new special cards that have been introduced into the refereeing game for this year. That someone will receive a yellow card this weekend.
Is that you going to try and give one out then? Is that wise?
No, I refuse to use the cards. I think they're silly. it's not about refusing to use the cards. I'm not sure. I think there's going to be an interesting calibration period where people get used to this idea of having these cards in the refereeing circles of flag football and see how they can be appropriately used. Because of course, if you remember now, I think if you do receive a red card, there's a financial penalty to that. And I think that type of power in some people's hands could be interesting. So I think there'll be a bit of a hesitancy to use that to start with. And
that's
then
not the new bit, because that's always been the case, is you can just eject someone from a game and there's always been a fine that goes ahead with that.
I agree, but how many people do you think report that ejection is probably my counter to that. But anyway, sorry, I'm cutting across.
But what is new, which I like, is the idea of this yellow card, and in particular the blue card, because I think people are very reluctant to go straight to an ejection. And sometimes all you want to do is just put someone in the sin bin, right? And you say, look, just leave the field. You can come back in a bit. And I think that is where the yellow card and the blue card will come into play, is that you can literally just send someone to the sideline and say, you cool off. And once you're, you know, ready to act like a normal sportsman again, then you can come back on the field. So having that little halfway house where it's probably going to empower referees better, and we'll have better games, which will end in less argy-bargy handbags, because referees will be able to not jump straight to an ejection, which I think a lot of people are reluctant to do.
Oh, I totally see the merit of it. I just think, and this is part of my bold prediction, I just think whilst we see this calibration period of people getting used to it, I think a team, I don't know who, I'm not saying who, and I'm not putting anybody's name up there, I just think a team will be over eager to use that function, and we'll see our first yellow carding of a player. And I think it could, and then this sort of an additional point to it, I think it could become quite a fractious thing, because let's hypothetically say you yellow card a quarterback. That's pretty detrimental to most teams. You know, there's not many teams running out there with two quality quarterbacks on the roster. I think we're going to see that first booking, as it were, of the league. And I'll be interested to watch that storyline unfold for the rest of the year.
Yeah, there's a lot of officials out there, myself included. I don't think he'd mind me saying, Neil Henderson, just don't take no shit. I think I'm certainly a candidate also to receive the booking, because I know I can be a tricky person to ref, and it means that I'm going to have to be on my best behavior.
Yeah.
So all I'm hearing is we're going to get a card section on the podcast for next week on the post-game review.
Is it a stat on play on League Republic that we can record?
I don't know, probably.
I'd like to change
a headline.
Yeah, who ends up with the most yellow cards in the nation would be by the end of the year.
I feel like some people would try and target that almost as a thing to go for.
Yeah, there's certainly one or two players I could see headbutting someone just for the sake of it.
No, it isn't. Ejection. It's just a yellow card. Please, ref, just yellow card.
What can I do that's just enough for a yellow, but not enough for a red? Good stuff, lads. Okay, cool. Anything else we want to talk about?
That's everything from me.
Football's back, boys.
Fantastic. Good stuff. Well, look, I've been Jay Ballamy, and I've been joined by Lewis Phillips and Ryan Home Alone McEvening, and I'll leave you in the hands and the cool embrace of the sponsor of this podcast.
That wraps up this episode. Find us on Facebook at First and 15 Podcast. Give us a like to keep up with all of our shows. Also, check out our sponsor, Nuola, for all your customized sportswear supplies.
Hello. No, that was a voice break.